Welcome to WrestleSpective Radio, and I'm Jason Mann, and with me as always is Josh Hatchett, and we're here to talk about the Monday Night Wars, November 1995, and this is the third month for Raw versus Nitro, and things are getting pretty hot and heavy, as you can see, so that's the first way that I came up with to describe it off the top of my head, so we'll just go with it.
Yeah, it works for me.
All right. By the way, I am remiss in not mentioning before that we compiled these results through multiple sources, but I will name a few of them here. These are all good websites to check out. The History of WWE.com, Online World of Wrestling, DDT Digest, ProWrestlingHistory.com, and also Scott Keith Rant Archives. His website is, I don't remember his website, but that's all right.
They're very helpful.
Yeah, they're very helpful. And Google them, you'll find them. And anyway, so we'll start with Nitro, November 6, 1995, in Jacksonville, Florida. The rating was 2.3, and the fans were able to vote for the main event via 900 number. Pretty exciting stuff, you know. I'm sure that you know fans were eager to vote.
I missed the hotline numbers.
Yeah,
they
were always big on you know, call the hotline and get the inside scoop.
Yeah,
you know, call Mean Gene and he'd tell you exactly what was going on with you know, the industry. It was good times. So there were two locker rooms, a red locker room and a red and a blue locker room. And it was clearly meant to lead you to vote for Sting versus Ric Flair, the main event, which is indeed what happened. So,
yeah.
Not to spoil it, everyone, but that's what happened. The World Heavyweight Champion, the Giant, pinned Cobra via a very quick squash.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan beat the Renegade. This is notable because it's the last appearance of Renegade for a long time. Basically, his last appearance as a Ultimate Warrior knockoff after like 6 months of being involved in that. And in the end, Kevin Sullivan basically beats him, humiliates him, and then Jimmy Hart and calls him, he's just plain Rick.
Just plain Rick.
He's just plain old Rick, so.
And it's safe to say that gimmick did not work.
No.
As far as Renegade.
It was kind of embarrassing for the most part, but what can you do? And Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit had themselves a match, and Eddie Guerrero was able to win it by pinfall following a crossbody block. Always good to see good workers on the show. Even then, you know, Nitro was setting itself apart with, you know, good in-ring work guys.
Yeah, good fast pace there. Guerrero, it seems like these few months has gotten a pretty good push.
Yeah.
Since we've started the, you know, back in September, you know, these 3 months, it seems like he's gotten a good push.
He's not really showing the personality that he would show later. I mean, he wasn't really strong as a babyface at this point, personality wise. Although, you know, he showed some fire. I mean, he was pretty good. He got a pretty solid push, but it's kind of odd that guys like him and Benoit, and it kind of reminds me a little bit with what TNA was doing with like the Pope and some of like their rising stars, where they'd give him big wins and then they'd lose suddenly.
Yeah,
and it was
like
kind of like back and forth. Like, also with like Desmond Wolfe and guys like that, it was like kind of like they were trading wins and they weren't really going anywhere, but they were showcasing. I mean, they were giving him time and showcasing pretty good wrestling, so it's hard to complain. It wasn't like they, at this point, should have been pushed to the main events. I mean, that came later when they should have had that opportunity and were denied it. But, you know, I mean, they were showcasing state-of-the-art wrestling, and it's hard to complain about that.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And the main event was Sting beating Ric Flair by submission. Sting won with the Scorpion Deathlock and then was unwilling to let go of the hold. So the babyfaces came out and tried to get him out of it. And in the end, Lex Luger comes out, who is technically a heel. And then he tells Sting something that causes Sting to let go of the hold. And Sting and Luger leap together and Luger is smiling. So
Luger seemed to be a change direction every week, you know.
Yeah.
That we've done this. 1 week he's a heel, 1 week he's a babyface. You watch some of the matches and you're thoroughly confused what exactly I'm supposed to be reacting to as far as
Baker's concerned. Well, I mean, they were trying to build him as being like, whose side is he on? What, you know, can Sting and can, you know, can Hogan trust Sting and Savage and Lou? I mean, I kind of get what they were doing, but at the same time, it was kind of convoluted and it was just.
Well, there's way too much involved just with everyone that, you know, it just didn't play off very good. And I was. There was too much of that involved, with too many characters involved with which side is he on. And it got to be a little much.
I mean, they clearly booked it. Well, it seems like they booked it week to week rather than kind of like having like a long-term plan, coherent plan.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when you're setting up something that ornate, you kind of have to know where you're going with it, and they did not appear to know where they were going with it, which you'll see at the ending when they. we'll get there.
Yeah.
All right, the November 6, 1995 Raw, it was a 2.1 rating. It was a taped show.
So Nitro beats Raw this week.
And Nitro beat Raw this week, yeah, 2.3 to 2.1. And Davey Boy Smith getting a pretty strong heel push with, and he beat Marty Jannetty with a running power slam. And it was announced that Davey would face the winner of the Bret Hart Diesel Survivor Series title match. And so, you know, he's being put over strong. Kind of his first main event. Well, he sort of had a main event push in WCW when he was there in 93. But, you know, first one since then, and, you know, his strongest one, certainly.
Yeah, definitely.
And also Henry Godwin beat Terry Richards with the slop drop. The immortal Terry Richards.
Yes.
And after the bout, Hunter Hearst Helmsley attacked Henry Godwin from behind and dropped him with a pedigree outside the ring, and then he slopped him. So a bucket of slop, as the hillbillies like to carry.
That's right, yeah.
And this led to the immortal Arkansas Hog Pen match at...
It is immortal
at the December pay-per-view. So I believe they were just on opposite teams in the Survivor Series. And Kama with Ted DiBiase beats the immortal Tony Roy.
Ted DiBiase sure did a poor job of picking his... What was the
Millionaire's Club? Million Dollar Corporation.
Corporation.
Yeah, the Millionaire's Club was the WCW that fought the New Blood.
Yeah, that's right.
He didn't really have a great eye for talent as a manager. No, he was a much better wrestler. You know, the weird thing is like he wore like regular suits when he was a manager instead of like the flashy, like gaudy, like, you know, like sequin, like $1 million man jackets that he wore when he was a wrestler. I don't know if they just cut back on the budget and he was like you know, like wearing like irregular,
Well, he had to save some money.
It seems like, maybe, you know, hard times in the mid-90s for the Million Dollar Man, although, you know, the economy was pretty strong then, so I don't really understand.
Yeah.
Maybe he just made some bad investments.
Well, maybe he just foresaw what was going to happen.
He foresaw the housing crisis 12 years or 13 years in the future. And
more focused on that than picking good wrestlers and, you know.
Oh, well,
planned accordingly.
Yeah, I guess it's tough when you're running a multi-million-dollar corporation to get all the details. Anyway, Jerry Lawler and Isaac Yankum DDS. I always like to say DDS after Isaac Yankum defeated Bret Hart and Hakushi with Barry Horowitz in Hakushi's corner because Barry Horowitz was Americanizing Hakushi. And via disqualification, after Horowitz attempted to. Wrestle away a steel chair from Jerry Lawler, but the referee turned around and saw Horowitz is with the chair. What a miscommunication there was there.
Yes. And how would you rate Jerry Lawler as a wrestler at this point?
You know, he was fine. I mean, he understood what to do, and he had good facials, and I mean, when you looked at him, you kind of thought like, oh, here's like an old guy who's kind of past his prime, and you know, but I think the first Bret Hart feud he had in 93 was a lot more effective than this one, because Lawler had more credibility than he had here. I mean, he was part-time announcer too, and it was just sort of like, I don't know, he was just kind of like a walking stereotype in a lot of ways. So I wasn't that impressed, but I mean, as far as, you know, he still did a lot of good little things, and he was a good heel.
Yeah, I thought, you know, he was decent, but I think it was hard to take him completely seriously when he's doing, you know, he's a half wrestler, half announcing, and I'm not sure that that gimmick ever really works all that well.
Because usually you're announcing when you're past your physical peak.
Yeah.
Coming back is like, you know, as for like a one-time match, as it works fine as for a babyface, I think, because they can come back every once in a while and, you know, fight the good fight, even if they lose in the end, it's okay because they're an announcer and they, you know, they did their best and whatever. For heel, doesn't work as well.
Yeah, I agree.
But so that was your main event, and moving on to Nitro, which actually was a taped show because they were in Japan.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So it's November 13th, 1995, and it featured a opening vignette showing Hulk Hogan armed with a sword, wearing a hood and a black mask, and talking about the match between Randy Savage and Ming, he didn't know if Sting was a friend or a foe.
These are like Twilight Zone things that you see.
Hogan was kind of paranoid at this point, apparently. So... And Randy Savage beat Ming with a flying elbow, and he came out of the crowd before the match to attack Ming and Sullivan from behind. And after the match, the Shark and Lex Luger helped gang up on Savage, and Luger repeatedly rammed Savage's arm into the ring post and assaulted it. And keep this in mind for later, the arm injury.
Apparently, Luger wasn't doing a very good job, as it turned out.
Yeah. And Chris Benoit pinned Kensuke Sasaki with a dragon suplex in only 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And Benoit had actually joined the Horsemen. It was shown on the WCW Saturday Night 2 days before this. But Bischoff only briefly mentioned that at the end of the match.
Yeah, it didn't seem like, you know, at this point, when they started Nitro, they didn't do a great job of, like, mentioning stuff that had happened on other,
Yeah, the continuity stuff, yeah.
Like, Nitro was its own separate show.
Right.
They only mentioned Nitro.
It was weird how they underplayed that. But I'm thinking that, you know, this was taped, obviously, although I don't know when the WCW Saturday Night was taped, so maybe they came up with a plan of adding Benoit after this was taped, but...
Yeah.
I don't know, kind of weird, but they gave the Horsemen a big enough push later on. It was just sort of an odd how that happened. And there was a 10-minute draw between Eddie Guerrero and TV champion Johnny B. Badd, which only lasted actually 9:03, but it's close enough. And they kind of got into a shoving match, but then they shook hands and they were pals. And the main event was U.S. champion Sting beating Dean Malenko, which was a nice little match they had.
Yeah.
You know, good, pretty good. Technical exhibition. They put over Malenko, you know, pretty strong, as you know, they mentioned his dad, the great Malenko. And, you know, I actually kind of funny that Steve McMichael, like, thought that Malenko had no chance because he was so small. And then Bischoff, like, stick up for him. Like, and then he, like, mentioned some random, like, Olympics in the 76 Olympics where a small guy beat a really big guy or something. Interesting way to prove that point, but fair enough. Also found that interesting that Dean Malenko and Mongo McMichael, of course, were later Horsemen together. So,
yeah,
you know,
true.
I don't know if Mongo, you know, if Malenko was mad about it 3 years later or not. But
yeah, I doubt it.
Okay. And this very day, in fact, Sting lost the title to Kensuke Sasaki, who had lost to Benoit earlier, which they mentioned during this taped match that Sting was going to defend the... title against Sasaki, which made the Benoit pinning Sasaki kind of odd, but Benoit did get the shot of pay-per-view, so we'll go ahead and we'll go with that.
Yeah,
we'll give him something there.
It didn't seem like this was a Nitro that really advanced a whole lot of feuds as far as some of the stuff they were working on, and again, that probably goes back to it being taped, and you know, they kind of didn't have a whole lot to go with, so.
Yeah. So, November 13th, 1995, Nitro got a 2.6, so it won for the week.
Yeah, Raw handled it pretty good.
Yeah.
2.6 to 2.0, that's a pretty big fluctuation from the
Yeah,
week
a lot of these numbers do kind of fluctuate, which I find interesting. But this is also a tape show, and it set up the beginning Gorilla Monsoon made the Razor Ramon Sid main event match in the show, although he made it a non-title match instead of a title match, which seems odd, but I'm sure they had their reasons. And also a face-to-face satellite segment with Bret Hart and Diesel for their Survivor Series match that was coming up in a week. And there was a no contest. Henry Godwin and Triple H, apparently, Godwin slapped himself knowing that Helmsley wouldn't be able to touch him. And then moments later, Helmsley retreated backstage only to slip and fall on some slop in the aisle. More hilarious comic hijinks ensue.
Yes. I think Triple H has come a long way since this particular angle.
Are you sure? You think so? I don't know. You got to enjoy the sophisticated blue blood and hijinks with the
pig slop.
Yeah, with pig slop. It's good times.
Yeah.
It's juxtaposition. You know, that's the key to comedy. Ahmed Johnson made his in-ring debut in a squash against Jake Steele. And Vince McMahon interviewed Ahmed at ringside. I can only imagine how that goes because Ahmed was not so coherent in the promos for the most part. So,
But Vince was high on Ahmed, wasn't he?
Well, he showed some potential for a while. I don't know when the hurting people all the time started, if that started right away or if that took a while, but, he had a great look, and he was in, good shape, and, the Pearl River Plunge, his finisher, the Tiger Bomb or Tiger Driver, I don't know moves. I should know moves better than I do as a wrestling fan, but I don't always. It looked good, and, he had good presence and charisma and stuff, so, it wasn't that ridiculous, the idea.
Yeah.
And King Mabel, with Sir Mo in his corner, pinned Roy Raymond, the legendary Roy Raymond.
Yes, there's a lot of legendary wrestlers during this time.
There are a lot, yes. And Psycho Sid, with Ted DiBiase in his corner, probably the crown jewel of the Million Dollar Corporation.
Yeah, I hope so.
Pinned Razor Ramon after a guest referee 123 Kid pulled Sid out of the Razor's edge and allowed Sid to win the match, and he even did a fast three count for good measure.
There you go.
So and the Kid officially joined the Million Dollar Corporation, and Dean Douglas also got involved attacking Razor Ramon during this whole situation. So. And it was a decent little match. For a Sid match, it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was...
Advanced the storyline anyway.
So. Yeah, it was fine. Although, I will say that wasn't a very... that was a fine match, but, looking before that, that wasn't...
No.
It wasn't a great Raw. Leading into Survivor Series.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you think of a go-home show, you're going to have a little bit of hotter stuff. But it was a different mentality then. So.
Yeah, yeah.
The... Survivor Series 1995 was November 19th, 1995, in Landover, Maryland, and it drew 14,500 and did an 0.57 buy rate, which was, I think, was down from the previous month, so this didn't do very well. The main matches were Goldust pinned Bam Bam Bigelow, which was Bam Bam's, I believe, his last match in WWE. I guess ever. He never came back to WWE.
No.
And the Dark Side, made up of The Undertaker, Savio Vega, Fatu, and Henry Godwin, beat Mabel, Jerry Lawler, Isaac Yankem, and Triple H. And Undertaker pinned Lawler, Yankem, and Triple H all in succession, and then Mabel decided to, after Undertaker did the zombie sit-up after Mabel hit him with the big move, that he decided he would go ahead and walk out and be counted out.
That's a kind of a weird dynamic for the Dark Side with Undertaker and Henry Godwin and the pig slop.
Yeah, well, I guess they just figure,
Throw them on there.
We'll throw in the other guys didn't really matter. So, And the most interesting Survivor Series elimination matches was the so-called wild card match, which put together Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnson, who were babyfaces, with Davey Boy Smith and Psycho Sid, who were heels, against Yokozuna, Owen Hart, and Dean Douglas, who were heels, and Razor Ramon, and who were baby faces. And who was baby face? And basically the explanation was just kind of do something different, just kind of, you know, this was, you know, mixing faces and heels. It doesn't happen that much today, but it was very, very rare then.
Yeah, it was very rare.
So ended up with Michaels and Ahmed and Davey Boy Smith being the survivors. And it's a fun match, you know, probably the strongest match out of these out of the Survivor Series. Actually, I'll just quickly mention the first two matches. We kind of skipped over those, but they were actually also very good matches. Skip, Rad Radford, Tom Pritchard, and the 1-2-3 Kid beating Marty Jannetty, Hakushi, Barry Horowitz, and Bob Holly. Much better than you'd expect given the personnel there. And also there was a women's Survivor Series match involving seven Japanese wrestlers and also Alundra Blaze, also known as Medusa. That's also kind of a fun little match. So
yeah, this was a pretty good, you know, the Survivor Series concept was pretty good series of matches in 95 compared to kind of the stuff we've been looking at.
So. Yeah, one of the stronger Survivor Series from top to bottom. Yeah. And the main event,
main event
is awesome. Yeah, Bret Hart pins Diesel to win the WWF World title in a no DQ, no count out match. Kind of a famous finish, especially for the time where Diesel was able to push Bret off the apron, and he went through the announce table, crashed through it, and basically he pulled him in and was setting up for the power bomb, and then Hart fell down, and you know Diesel was kind of overconfident, and then he pulled him up again, and then Hart got him with a small package and pinned him for three, and then Diesel goes crazy and he power bombs Bret a bunch of times and attacks the referees, and so just kind of really cool. Really cool finish, great match. One of Diesel's best matches. All his matches with Bret were always good.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, yeah. But it's just interesting that, obviously Bret was really good, but Bret didn't always get good matches. You know, not all of his Undertaker matches were good. You know, it's for some reason, for whatever reason, whenever he and Diesel got together, it was always really good.
Yeah, I do like that they worked in the, you know, Bret was kind of sneaky and was able to get the small package for the win. You know, I think that's a underrated tactic that's, you know, pretty much non-existent.
I mean, it protects Diesel because, you know, Bret kind of beat him on a not a fluke, but I mean he beat him, you know, on a way that still made Diesel look strong, and you know, it could have set up a rematch, or you know, it ended up sending him in different directions, but
that was a very good Survivor Series.
Yeah
So, probably out of the pay per views that we've done, that was probably the best one out of, you know, the since September '95, that was probably by far the best one.
I would agree with that, no question about it. All right, the Raw following that was live from Richmond, Virginia, and did a 2.3, and 1-2-3 Kid with Teddy Biasi pinned Hakushi. And Marty Jannetty came out at the end of it, although to confront 1-2-3 Kid, and although he was attacked by Psycho Sid and powerbombed on the floor. And Savio Vega fought Skip to a no contest with Diesel interrupted, and he cut a promo at ringside and said that he was happy that he being no longer champion because he no longer had to be a corporate puppet for Vince McMahon. And Shawn Michaels, by far the most famous match from this Raw, was Shawn Michaels and Owen Hart in another no contest. But when Owen hit Shawn with an enziguri, and Michaels collapsed after posing in the ring, and the ref checked on Shawn, asking if he could hear his voice, and then EMTs came rushed to the ring and tried to revive him, and basically they faded. You know, they faded to black with him, you know, having oxygen and, you know, treating it like it was a real life situation. You know, I'm not a fan of these type of angles, given everything that's happened in wrestling.
Yeah, anymore,
But, you know, for what it was extremely well done. I mean, people took it seriously at the time, and, you know, so, you know, it was good storytelling. I mean, not in the best taste, I would say, but...
Do you have any idea where this was, you know, how this was concocted and what's kind of the behind it?
I mean, I think it was just a way to get Shawn more over as a babyface and to set up his big comeback at the Royal Rumble and to give him momentum, you know, setting up the, you know, his WrestleMania match. I think that was really the only, I don't know if he had to, well, he, you know, he had, you know, the Syracuse incident had happened a few, you know, months before or whatever, where he got into a fight with some Marines and got beat up pretty badly. So he, maybe he needed time to recover from that. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah,
but,
that could be too.
Yeah. And the Nitro that night was 2.5 from Macon, Georgia. So Nitro won the night, even after the Survivor Series.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they go from getting beat pretty bad to WWF having a strong pay-per-view, and now they win. So... It was strange how this was working these days.
Yeah. Scott Norton pinned the Shark, and Eddie Guerrero pinned Brian Pillman, who was a sub for Ric Flair. Ric Flair came out and said that Eddie was beneath him, and he didn't need to wrestle him, and he was going to go out with all the horsemen, and they were going to have a party. And then Pillman, unfortunately, was unable to do the job. Although he didn't really seem to suffer any consequences for it, so I guess the horsemen aren't too worried about winning matches. What can you do?
Yeah.
And... Road Warrior Hawk pinned Big Bubba after some help from Jim Duggan, and Jim Duggan and Big Bubba were wrapped up in an epic feud.
It was epic.
I believe it led to a taped fist match at World War III. And Hulk Hogan with Randy Savage in his corner, his left arm in a sling, note that, fought Sting to a no contest. They built up the Sting match in the previous week. We didn't mention that, but that was... sort of interesting that with this and with Hogan and Luger, you know, on the second Nitro, them doing a lot of, you know, you could say dream matches at the time.
Yeah, I mean, with really no build up and no,
or not much of one anyway. Which
no feud or you know any backstory or anything.
Yeah, like I guess that explains the Nitro rating being raw. The 2.5.
They promoted it.
Yeah. Basically, it sets up that you know Hogan hulks up for Sting, and then you know Hogan does, you know, does his usual thing. He goes for the leg drop, but Sting moves, and then Sting gets Hogan into the Scorpion Deathlock, at which Hogan says he is going to break my leg. Help me! And the Dungeon of Doom comes down,
shocking,
and begins to attack Savage, Sting, and Hogan. Yeah, they. They were not afraid to do the crappy finishes on Nitro, you know, which, I mean, you know, it's fine to do them once in a while, but, you know, doing them every week, you know, it got old pretty quick.
And they had multiple run-ins, too, you know, because Giant comes down as well.
Yes.
And, I mean, it was like Hogan had, like, two separate feuds. And, I mean, it seemed like all these guys were working two feuds at the same time. You know, part of it was Dungeon of Doom.
That's true.
Part of it was the Giant. The other part, you know, maybe it's Lex Luger too. You know, it just, I don't know, it was just way too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially with only an hour.
Yeah, I mean, if they had done, like we kind of talked about before, I mean, if they had done like a Hogan and Savage and Sting and Luger kind of feud, I mean, they could have been baby faces, but just had like the rivalry.
Yeah.
And maybe you could like wonder about like Luger's motivations, whether he was a heel or, you know, you could have done something interesting with that and kept it pretty simple. But yeah, there was certainly a lot going on, and, you know. Anyway, then Giant tries to do a double choke slam, but Savage hits him with a chair, and then he no-sells the chair shots, and then they are able to Sting and Hogan are able to get the advantage of the Giant, and then. And Giant kind of goes crazy at the end, and this sets up the they announced it a few weeks before, we didn't mention that, but the World War III Royal Rumble, the three rings, 60 men with absolutely no way to follow any of it until they get to the last you know, they all go into the one ring.
It's perfectly fitting for WCW to try to do 60 men.
Yes.
You know. One ring isn't enough. One feud isn't enough. We need three feuds. We need three rings. And this is perfectly fitting for the time.
Yeah. The World War III 1995 pay-per-view was November 26th in Norfolk, Virginia. And it drew 12,000 and was shown on pay-per-view doing a 0.43. So it went down and was lost to Survivor Series that week.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the you want to talk about the next thing, the great interview?
I'll let you.
All right.
I don't know if I can do it justice.
Okay, fair enough. Well, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, and Sting come out with a garbage pail and Hogan's dark side black costume. As we talked about in the last show, Hogan had been dressing in all black, and
He was confused.
he'd been talking about things like, what do you say, everyone knows what a guy with a pair of gloves is, a pair of black gloves is capable
Yes.
of,
And he also had a sword at some point.
comparing himself to OJ, and you see, but they came out and they set out to burn the costume. He tore the shirt off and he had the red and yellow. You see, he was only fooling.
Yes, well, of course.
And he was playing mind games to lull Kevin Sullivan, the taskmaster, into a sense of false sense of security.
Well, anything to fit in Hogan's view of the truth, I guess.
Yes. I don't understand how this lulls him into a false sense of security. I guess the dissension among them perhaps does.
I have no idea.
Yes.
Also, Hogan gave it away because he had the black shirt on and the black do-rag thing,
But
but he had the
yellow, red
yellow and
pants.
red pants.
Well,
It's like, come on.
apparently they couldn't find tailored pants in time. I don't know.
I saw that and I just laughed. I
Yeah.
mean, you already gave it away.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Why reveal this now, and why not reveal it like after the match? That doesn't really make sense. Because it's like, oh, well, now they're all together, so now we have 2.5 hours to figure out a game plan.
So much for
Plus,
lulling Kevin
it's not
Sullivan.
like these are teams fighting each other. I mean, this is a 60-man, every man for himself battle royal.
Yeah, so he's
So
gonna be fighting Savage and Sting at some point anyway, so.
I don't understand, but what can you do? But the best part of this, though, is that apparently Savage's arm injury is completely a ruse.
Even though he still has a bandage on when he's
Yes,
wrestling later.
yes. And he and apparent, but he rips the Wrestling Observer for saying that the Giant would win the Royal Rumble, and for saying that Savage had a legitimate arm injury. And because the internet is where it's at, that's where all the scoops are now.
The internet is where it's at,
Yes,
brother.
the Observer's a dinosaur, and he was able to predict the downfall of the print media about a decade before it happened. So, good for him.
What would he do now with the Observer available online?
I don't know if he would have an answer for that.
It's
Maybe he would, criticize him for not having an iPhone app. I don't know. That'd be my guess.
possible. Well, they do though.
Oh, that's right. They do have an iPhone app.
So
Well, then
Hogan's out of luck now.
I'm behind. All right. The major matches were Johnny B. Badd pitting Diamond Dallas Page, and
Pretty good match.
yeah, he had and Page had put Kimberly on the line here in exchange for the title match. They were having domestic problems, and so now Johnny Badd was given the services of Kimberly. I think these are more innocent services than you might than the implied in other types of matches like this. So, Big Bubba Rogers pinned Jim Duggan in a taped fist match. Epic feud they were having.
Let's move on.
And yes, and Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto beat Mayumi Ozaki and Cutie Suzuki. And I didn't see this match, but I saw the Nitro match they had the night afterward, and actually pretty good. They had some cool stuff. And Kensuke Sasaki beat Chris Benoit, which was again set up by the Benoit win on Nitro.
A decent build for that.
Yeah,
That
kind of
was a
makes
pretty good
sense.
match.
Yeah, Saki wasn't really anything that terrific, but he was fine. Lex Luger beat Randy Savage via submission with an arm bar to Savage's
But it wasn't hurt.
heavily bandaged arm. So, weird. And Sting beat Ric Flair via submission, and with the normal stuff, suplex into a Scorpion Deathlock. So, it seems like Sting's beating Flair a lot, for Flair having now a big heel thing, but
Yeah, this was interesting because Flair kind of ran into all three rings during the match.
oh yeah,
They'd start one, start to get, he's getting beat up a little, so he'd run to the next ring and try to catch Sting off guard. One thing I want to ask you, where was this feud, You know, obviously Sting and Flair had probably feuded, you know, dozens of times. You know, maybe not dozens, but, you know, numerous times up to this point. Was it fresh? Was it tired by this point? Where was this feud?
They'd feud. Well, it was probably pretty tired. I mean, they'd feuded a little bit in 94 right before Hogan came in. They hadn't feuded since then, so it wasn't. I don't know. I think the fact that it had happened the way it happened with Sting trusting Flair like a sucker, and then I think that probably didn't give it the best origins.
This didn't feel like a big feud between the two. This just kind of seemed like mid card. The way this match came off.
It very much was. Yeah. I mean, they were pretty much. I mean, Hogan was the show, and everything else was kind of secondary. I mean,
It was kind of weird seeing that, you know, in this, you know, how it was kind of regarded.
Yeah.
You know, they tried to make it big, but it just didn't seem like it at all.
They do a nice match, triangle match at Starrcade with Sting, Flair, and Lex Luger.
Okay.
That's kind of a cool. That was kind of a cool. I guess it kind of blew off the feud a little bit. So that's a fun one to watch. That was a good moment. But yeah, you know, this feud was. They had better ones. I mean, really, I don't think they ever did anything that lived up to the first match they had. I mean, you know, they had some very good ones, obviously, and they had a good feud and everything. But I mean, I think the first match they had really by far was the hottest thing they ever did, and I don't think they ever quite lived up to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But and then the main event, the three ring battle royal, was Randy Savage wanted to become the WCW champion.
That was horrible way they presented this, with each ring like a portion of the screen.
Yes. Oh yeah, you could barely see.
it was a waste of time.
Yeah.
Complete waste of time to watch the first 15 to 20 minutes of this match.
The presentation of it did not improve on the subsequent three World War III pay per views. So.
There had to be a better way. I mean, have an overhead angle or something where you can fit all three in one shot. But, I mean, this was like watching three rings on a 3-inch screen.
It was
awful.
The setup for the match was Hogan ended up dumping Sting, Luger, and Giant, who were all sort of tied in the ropes together. But the Giant pulled Hogan from under that scoundrel, pulled him from under the bottom rope. And then Savage tossed the one-man gang, who was the other. So the ref saw Savage taking the one-man gang out, and they assumed that Hogan went over the top, thus giving Savage the world title.
Yes.
And Hogan, not real happy about this, threw a big temper tantrum, thinking that he should be the champion. The crowd wasn't really that enthusiastic with him at the end of it. Which, I mean, Hogan was getting booed, you know, now and then anyway at this point. But Savage, I guess, which is not unusual in their relationship.
It was weird how this all worked out, because obviously, you know, Hogan went out like that, but it, you know, that was kind of cheap. But he made himself look even worse, you know, just like a crybaby with all this, and it was, and just how this, you know, Hogan was in a weird spot.
Yeah,
you know, at this point,
kind of similar to the Sid Hogan finish at the Royal Rumble '92 when Flair won the title, and then Hogan cried like a baby because Sid, you know, turned on him. So
One thing, when they, him and Giant were, you know, fighting outside the ring, you know, as Savage is winning, you don't even see Savage eliminate One Man Gang on the broadcast because they're focusing on Hogan and Giant. Hogan body slams him right on the outside, you know, totally out of nowhere and totally for no reason.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good
he
point.
He just picks
him
up and body slams him out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, you waste, you know, whatever build up or anything like that just for some worthless random body slam that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And you also miss Savage getting the title.
Yeah.
So, bad all the way around.
Yeah.
But it'd probably only get worse on pay-per-view.
Not good times. That wasn't really the best show, was it?
No.
Not, nothing.
That was pretty poor.
Yeah.
Survivor Series, much better.
Yes. November 27th, 1995 Nitro did a 2.3. It was from Salem, Virginia. And Gene Okerlund did an interview with Kevin Sullivan and Jimmy Hart about the relationship between Lex Luger and Sting. And Sullivan blamed Luger for breaking the armbar on Randy Savage during their match the previous night. And then Hart told Sullivan that it would take away to chip at the friendship between Luger and Sting, but that he actually could do it, which it's, you know, hi, let's just talk about our master plan and interview, like, openly. maybe Lex and Sting weren't listening. Maybe they weren't listening to it, or, you know, I don't know. But, and then they do an interview with Savage, and Hogan comes out moments later because, you know, of course Hogan can't give Savage a moment in the spotlight. Yeah. And then they try to go to the footage, but the tape goes right out just so, you know, so we can't see it. And then the Giant attacks Hogan and Savage from behind. Savage gets hit with a choke slam on the concrete, and then assaults Hogan in the ring. And then Sting comes out and distracts the Giant. And so Hogan grabs a Sting steel chair and hits Giant about 100 times. And then then Hogan and Sting check on Savage.
I think Giant leads the world in run-ins during this time.
He does. He
runs in all the time.
He loved the run-in.
I don't know if he runs in, but he.
Well, you know, he could run in at this point. He was actually he was pretty svelte.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Yeah, he was in good shape, and he was pretty impressive looking physically. I mean, he's obviously big. I mean, he's moving bigger now, but but he had an aura that I didn't quite remember him having. You know, it was pretty. You know, it was pretty good. They could have done more with, I mean, you know, they did okay with him here or there, but, I mean, they did the stop and start with him, you know, quite a bit.
Yeah.
Johnny Badd in a rematch with DDP beats him in 2 minutes, and Kimberly threw a chain to Johnny Badd that went through DDP's legs, and it was hidden in a bouquet of flowers that DDP had given Kimberly before the match to make up with her. And with the intent that she used the chain on his behalf. However, that didn't work out. Although Johnny Badd questioned who she was throwing it to, and she said not to worry about it. So apparently, didn't.
So if you say so.
And the match I mentioned, the rematch between Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto versus Cutie Suzuki and Mayumi Ozaki, and Hokuto pinned Suzuki with a Fisherman Buster, and it was good, real good match. Like I said, and Hulk Hogan wrestled Hugh Morris.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Didn't see that coming.
No. And Sting and Lex Luger defeated Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman when Sting beat Pillman with a roll-up. And Flair came out, rammed Luger head first into the steel ring post and helped Anderson and Pillman assault their opponents. And then Hogan made the save, cleared the ring, and he attempted to get Luger as well and was held back by Sting.
Well, there you go. That's, that's doing a little better job with Sting there, but not wanting to be second in anything, Hogan trying to match the Giant with running. So.
Yes. Well, you know, Hogan can't be beat.
No, he cannot.
He cannot. So, November 27th, Raw, 2.5, taped show, and it won the ratings, 2.5, 2.3. They did an update on Shawn Michaels' condition, that he had post-concussion syndrome. They returned the Brother Love Show from more than a four-year absence, and the guest was Bret Hart. And he was jumped from behind by Bob Backlund, who quickly applied the cross-faced chicken wing. I had not noticed this before. That's interesting. Until referees swarmed the ring. Had no idea they brought that back. Featured the announcement that Razor Ramon and Marty Jannetty would face Psycho Sid and the 1-2-3 Kid at In Your House, and that Razor would face Dean Douglas the following week. Exciting matches.
Yeah, there you go.
And you know, speaking of an exciting card, Ahmed Johnson pinned Rad Radford, and Tomoko Watanabe and Aja Kong defeated Alunder Blaze, the women's champion, and Koyoko Inouye. And Kong pinned Inouye with a spinning backhand blow. And this was Blaze's last appearance, and in fact, in a couple weeks later, she would appear on Nitro with a women's title and drop it in a trash can.
Yeah, that was a noteworthy
that was moment a there. Noteworthy moment in the Nitro, in the Monday Night War. And Hunter Hearst Helmsley pinned the talented John Crystal with a pedigree, and they showed a vignette of Henry Godwin at his hog farm preparing for the hogpen match against Triple H in your house.
So far, this I've been very underwhelmed with this show.
Yeah, and
they beat Nitro.
And better yet, they showed footage from the weekend show at Madison Square Garden, in which Howard Finkel was slapped by Henry Godwin.
More mass hilarity.
Yes, always good to embarrass Howard Finkel
every weekend. Yes, because he's so terrible.
Yes, and the Undertaker. We're kidding. Howard Finkel is awesome.
Yes,
but. The Undertaker pinned Sir Mo, who was a substitute for Kama, who faked a leg injury, and then he recaptured the remnants of the urn, despite getting interference from Kama. He was able to recapture the remnants of the urn, but only for King Mabel to attack Paul Bearer and then steal them when Undertaker was distracted by Yokozuna at ringside. And 1995, there was a whole lot of urn stealing, and it was pretty much Undertaker fighting terrible heels for the urn.
Yeah, this was when they included stuff like this with the Undertaker. It's when it kind of got, you know, not necessarily his fault, but it just kind of got goofy and comic bookish.
It was kind of like the WWF version of Dungeon of Doom. The years of 1992 to 1995 were not good for the Undertaker as far as match quality and as far as you know, memorable. I mean, there was stuff that was memorable, but it was usually memorable for the wrong reason because it was terrible.
Yeah, just the goofy angles and it just made him look goofy. And do you think at some point, like say around here, that there's some concern about, you know, could Undertaker last? Could he, you know, have some good feuds, or were they kind of always sold on him, you think?
Well, I mean, I don't think they were not sold to the point where they were like ever thinking about getting rid of him or anything like that. But I think the shelf life seemed limited for that character. It was only when he was able to make the transition to being more realistic in a way. I mean, he still did a lot of the magical stuff, but I mean, he was more like the feuds he was engaged in were more realistic. They were more based
on, dark.
Yeah, they were more based on just, you know, what was going on in the ring rather than, you know, stupid supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, you know, mid-96 when he got involved with Mankind and had a long feud with him was really the first when, you know, he showed something, you know, something extra, something, you know, stronger as a worker. And, you know, that helped him, you know, basically just establish a different side of himself. And that, you know, led to, you know, the, you know, longevity and improvement as a wrestler and, you know, pushed him to where he was today. Obviously, there was a lot more to that, but, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. This wasn't a good place for him right now. So,
no, but
at this stage,
What can you do? All right. Well, that's that ends November 1995 Monday Night War. Got anything else to add, Josh?
Well, I would say probably WWF had the better month, just based on the month. And
yeah,
it seems like WCW kind of started hot in September, you know, with Nitro, but it seems like they've kind of fallen back to what had ailed them, you know, the last...
They
had some good things.
The Hogan Sting match was a pretty hot match and, you know, was memorable, at least, being their first encounter. You know, some decent stuff with the Horsemen, but yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I still think overall WWF had a stronger month.
And a much better pay-per-view.
Yeah, no question about that, so... Anyway, that's all we have here. If you'd like to email us, you can. We're at wrestlespective@gmail.com. The website is wrestlespective.blogspot.com. And we're available on Facebook. Just look for Fans of Wrestlespective. And we're available at Twitter, at Wrestlespective. So look, do a search for Wrestlespective, and you'll find many forms of us. And anyway, thanks for listening, and feel free to share any thoughts you have, and we'd be glad to hear it. And we're going to continue this series very soon. So, adios.